Yeah, this is from the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, which they are following from the 8-week course, which just concluded at Arshavidya Gurukula. So, in human relationships, you mentioned that there is an animalistic vasana that comes up, survival instincts, etc., that make us react to situations. Please elaborate on that, relying on Ishvara as protector, and therefore becoming a karta to grow spiritually. Yes, I can do that. So, not just in human relationships, in human beings. Human life itself, you know, we have, in the human life, we have a glorious gift. A gift of the ability to grow. That's a glorious gift. Because this you don't have in Pashu life. In the Pashu's Jivana, in the Pashu's life, it also goes through the 6 modifications. Shag Vikara. And what are they? Jayate, is born. Asti, survives birth. Vardhate, grows. Viparinamate, becomes capable of blossoming, reproducing, etc., reaches the peak. Then after that, Kriyate, comes down, starts to decay. Then finally, Vinashyati, gone. So these 6, you know, this is called Shad Vikaraha. So this kind of a growth cycle is common to both animals and human beings. But for the human being, there is something else, a capacity for another kind of a growth, which is a possibility, but it has to be initiated. Initiated. It is not, I don't know, something is making a noise.
Yeah, it's okay.
It has to be self-initiated. Because if it is not something that comes automatically. One grows old automatically. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to pray for your first grey hair. Oh, where are you? Please come. You don't have to do that. It comes. Whether you like it or not. Yeah, you don't have to pray for joint pain. When are you coming? It'll come. Yeah. It'll come. So like this, you know, this happens automatically. All these, this sixfold growth happens automatically for both the animals and the human beings. But the human being alone has the capacity to initiate another kind of a growth which is dependent on oneself. And that self-growth that is initiated is not available to animal sharira, animal bodies, because they don't have that self-consciousness which is so free to even be able to judge themselves. So, for example, you know, the dog neither has a degree, you know, a dog which neither has a degree nor a pedigree, it's fine, being how it is. It's, you know, it doesn't say, I'm a street dog. This is in India, you know. I'm a street dog. I'm the target of every urchin's catapult. And I'm so sad. I can't go for walks. I look all mangy. It doesn't say that. It is happy being what it is. Neither does the pedigreed dog, you know, going to all the dog shows, very happy and proud because it has got 3 years certificate in a row, reigning champion. In fact, that certificate with a little bow is for the owner, not for the dog. It's not for the dog. If you show the dog the certificate, it will assimilate it. Swaha. That's what it will do. It will eat it up. It will not do anything else. What will it do with that? Nothing. And so, but for the human being, or, you know, this capacity to desire, the capacity to be free enough to judge oneself is both a curse and a blessing. It's a curse because, you know, in some ways the animals are better off, you know. No poodle otherwise will go for a walk. It was to sit at home like this and say, look at what you have done to me, all these, you know, pom-poms everywhere. Am I a tree? You have pruned me like this. I'm not going to go for a walk. What have you done to me? It will still go. No self-consciousness. In a way, it's a blessing. But in a way, it's a curse because one is not able to live with that self-judgment. And one is not happy eating, drinking, going to work, growing old, and then dying, and then being born again. One is not happy with that. Once, you know, because no matter how successful your career, no matter how big your house, no matter how important your life, and how many pages of Google hits come up when you search this person's name, that person has a certain kind of a constriction. And this is not, I'm here not talking of the yearning for Vedanta. I could be, but we are not even there yet. This constriction is to just be better, to grow into a more compassionate, more accommodative, and more giving person. That is the urge, to not be reactionary, to not be, you know, small, to be big. And that urge is already there, because it is a precursor of the yearning for God, the yearning to be one with Ishvara, the yearning for Vedanta. So its precursor is wanting to be big, wanting to, you know, have a different kind of a self-growth from what we call prakrita buddhi. Prakritam, you know, prakritehe iyam. You know, idam, prakritam, or prakritehe bhavam, prakritam, that which is born of prakriti, nature made. So this is the buddhi, reactive, angry at the drop of a hat, taking everything personally, not in a position to be able to take things easy, you know, that the person wants to do but unable to do, all tied up in knots over small things. And there is no shanti there. There is a lot of inner ashanti. Ashanti means disturbance. And so this growth from prakrita buddhi to samskrita buddhi is what we are talking about in the first question. And the Samskrita Buddhi is not a buddhi that knows Sanskrit. Samskritam means well done. A civilized buddhi. A buddhi that has gone through many iterations and it has conquered some of its base tendencies, which are actually very bestial in nature. You know, when the donkey is angry, what will it do? It will kick. You know, if the cow doesn't like the person milking it, it will kick them. It will kick the bucket, you know, it will kick the person. It will, you know, use the horns and gore the person. It will do that. But you can't hold it culpable because it does not have freedom over action. It has freedom of action, but not over action. That's the difference. Even if a sadhu stands behind the donkey, you know, it will kick the sadhu. You can't blame the donkey. You have to blame the sadhu. You have to say, what an idiotic fellow. Why did you go and stand behind the donkey? Don't you have that much sense? What are you doing? You know? And so, this is what is called prakrita buddhi. And you see the same thing in a small child. You know, in front of the toy store, or in front of the checkout counter in the supermarket, it will have a tantrum right then and there because it cannot wait. Because there is no filters, there is no ability to press the override button to these base emotions. But after a while, what happens, you know, the society makes sure that we are kind of put together enough to pass off as sane and go hold office jobs and be let loose in the society, because we have a certain say over that. A swamitva, a kind of a mastery, you know, at least on the level of what? For appearance's sake. We may be seething inside, one may be seething inside, but the person is more or less put together and looks like an adult, and the assumption is we'll behave also like an adult. But yet, you know, these emotions are there lurking within. And the source is twofold. One is again from the, you know, from those vasanas, and those vasanas again, if you look, actually it's the vasanas are one source. You can't say they are a separate source, because the vasanas go back to what we call the Freudian unconscious, the unconscious mind. And this unconscious, Freud got the credit for naming it the unconscious. But actually, the intellectual property right should rest with Adi Shankara's grand guru, Gaudapadacharya. Sakashayam vijaniyat samprapvana vichalayet. This is what he said while talking about meditation, is that horrid thoughts of self-judgment come when you sit in meditation. You feel like a failure. You will feel all kinds of doubts that this is not taking you anywhere, and bubbles from the past will come up. Ignore them and keep with the meditation. They will go away after, their hold will go away after some time. Don't try to stir them up and see where they lead and where they are from, because it's not a useful inquiry, because they all lead to the same place, mithya, maya, avarna, correct? And it's interesting, because this is the avarna shakti of maya, which is the unconscious, manifest as the unconscious, because it is, that's why it is called unconscious, it is concealed from you, it is unconscious, you are unconscious of it. And even the nicest person can be prodded into a, you know, volcanic anger. Where did this come from? You're so mild. Well, I don't know what happened. Although, not only is the fellow surprised, everyone around him is surprised. Or her. Everyone around her or him is surprised. You know, in the olden days, about a few decades ago, whenever a hurricane came, they would only give it women's names. Yeah. And then people complained, the women complained to the National Weather Service, Weather Bureau, and they said, this is not fair, what are you trying to say? That we women are all like hurricanes? Now it's, you know, now it is very, very equal. After Harvey comes Irma. After Irma comes, you know, something, Michael. After Michael comes Florence. It's all equal. But this kind of a volcanic anger, hurricane-like, tsunami-like emotions, they are there. The storehouse is called the unconscious. This is what it is. And this is not new. This is old. And the discussion of this in Vedanta has been done in the Brahma Sutras, in the Mandukya Karika. Sakashayam na vijaniyat sampraptva, meaning when you come in contact with it, don't try to keep looking for the reason, because you won't get the reason. When was the first balloon burst, you know, by the, usually by the sibling, you know, your first balloon was burst by the elder brother or sister. And then even if the fellow now is given 50 balloons on the 50th birthday, won't be happy. No, will not be happy, because that balloon is what I want. How are you going to bring back that balloon? That is why it's called unconscious. It makes no sense. And one grows out of it by parenting the, what is called in psychological parlance, the inner child. And the inner child work is also not new. If you look at Dakshinamurti, have you seen Dakshinamurti's photo? You have seen Lord, yes. Dakshinamurti? Yes. And so you see a little baby at the foot. Looks like a baby. First it looks, what is this? The Lord is putting the foot on a baby. When you go closer, the fellow has mustaches, a dagger and a sword, offensive and defensive. What Pujya Swamiji called ninja. Yeah, mutant and ninja, the ungrown side. This is there in every person. So therefore, the two have to be integrated. You don't throw away the baby. The baby has to be loved up, and you have to parent it. And that is part of the self-growth, to initiate this growth into this bigness. Because there are two divergent urges in every human being. to be big, to be more compassionate, more kind, to be everything. And then at the same time to guard everything that's mine and small and oh, somebody is taking it away, what to do? Both these things cannot coexist. And that's what, and that unhappy marriage in each person is called samsara. So where is samsara? In between the temples. Right here. The ungrown one, the one who never wants to grow up, and the adult. In fact, even in Vedanta, you know, two people come for the teaching. One wants validation from the teacher. Beta, beti, wonderful, how nice you are. And the other one wants to be taught. This is the discrepancy. And the pedagogy of the Upanishads teaches, you know, in from the Upanishads and from Pujya Swamiji's teaching from the Arsha Parampara, we learn how to keep the inner child humored until one teaches the way to deal with it and at the same time give the knowledge. The Upanishad also does that. It breaks into a joke. It will break into a story. The story and the joke is for the inner child. Interspersed with teaching. The teaching is for the adult. So both go away happy. And then the adult is taught how to take care of this unconscious so that it doesn't come in the way of the knowledge. But even if, let's say, one is not a Vedantin and not interested in knowledge, still this unconscious mind has to be taken care of. One has to learn to parent it. But it's much more tempting to give it to the significant other, to parent. Yeah. This is the reason why people get married. Oh, good, somebody to babysit my inner child. Doesn't work because they have their children that they will make you also babysit. And if you can't stand your own inner child, do you think you'll be able to love other person's inner child? No way. Yeah, keep on dreaming. Not possible. And so therefore what? So therefore we have, you know, we have mechanisms of needing to parent it oneself. You have to have compassion towards your anger, towards all these quote-unquote bestial emotions. And why are they called bestial? Because they get the best of you. So you have, you know, you have to have compassion. And just like you see the toddler crying in front of the supermarket or the toy shop, and the mother is laughing, the parents are laughing because they know that it is tired, it is just needing to be put to bed. You have to have that same space, that distance, and not come under the spell of it. It cannot run the show. And at the same time, you don't have to take it out and throw it away because it is, you know, it is important to take care of it. And once, you know, as one begins the journey of taking care of it, you know, the bigness is no longer eclipsed. The person grows into a to a samskrita purusha, a civilized buddhi, more compassionate, more accommodative, more giving, more yielding, more there, more free, free with oneself, free with everybody else. And this is what we want, because this becomes an appropriate buddhi to take on the and be completely transformed by the Vedanta Shastra. The Shastra speaks and exists for such a buddhi. And it's so interesting, I find, from the standpoint of Maya Shakti. You want water?
Yes. Sorry.
So from the standpoint of Maya Shakti, I told you unconscious is the avarna. Right? And the problem is not in the avarna, really. Even though we say avarna is the problem, on this level, this is just Ishvara Srishti, that every buddhi has ragadveshas, every buddhi has unconscious. But here, the problem is the unconscious leads to vikshepa. You can have your own projections based on the filter of the unconscious. That has to be, you know, that's where you can withdraw that projection, subjective projections. And then when the unconscious is taken care of, the subjective projections are reduced and one is able to see the world for what it is and allow it to just be. And this is something which is, you know, very, very important as a as a progress and as a way to internalize Vedanta. And if one is feeling, I have been studying for so long but nothing is happening, this is the place to look.
Yeah.
So one question we can take from here and then I'll go back again here. Yeah, so we can go back and forth. Are there any questions from the group? Okay, next one. Yeah.
So did you answer the first question though, in the sense that...
Please elaborate on, relying Ishvara as the protector. Relying Ishvara, that's why, to complete the story of Dakshinamurti. That is the unconscious at the Lord's foot. So that means, he's teaching just by his very being. And so one's unconscious is placed, surrendered to the Lord. And the Lord just puts his foot on it, H-E-A-L, H-E-E-L, both. And then what? And then allows it to just be and gives one the courage to outgrow and not come repeatedly under the spell of the eclipsing unconscious through prayer. That is how.
Yeah.
That is the last portion of the question.
Yes.
So this is what it is, surrender. The unconscious, because you don't know where it's coming from, you don't know what it has, and one is not in charge of it in a way, because it seems so bizarre, so you just keep putting the unconscious, I don't know where these feelings are coming from, please take it away, but at the same time grow to be a sakshi, a witness of those feelings, and then, be in a place of connecting to that, and having that, having that Lord to which one surrenders. And so the Lord becomes the altar of surrender. And when the Lord becomes the altar of surrender, it alters you. That alters you. That's why it's called altar. Yeah. Hello.
It's Kavan.
Hello, Kavan. How are you? Hi.
Come and sit with
me, sir. Hi, Kavan.
It's my daughter.
Hello.
Serena, Scott.
Yeah.
I didn't get the last part. I missed something.
What did you miss?
The whole thing about Ishvara. What was the thing? I lost the link. So we had the unconsciousness.
Not unconsciousness, please. Yeah, that means we can't even have this talk if we are all unconscious. This is unconscious. The unconscious.
The unconscious that we have to. I didn't get the link to the Ishvara to that.
You see, I told you that little baby, so to speak, baby, is actually all the raga dvesha. Everything that the unconscious has, anger, fear, sorrow, all that is in the form of this offensive, defensive baby.
Right.
Yes. Hello. Come. So, and that is what is here, it's at the Lord's foot. So telling us that we have to dedicate the unconscious to the Lord, you transform it through prayer. And when you transform it through prayer, then it doesn't, it heals.
It doesn't overtake
you. It doesn't overtake you. That's why I said heal has a pun. H-E-A-L, H-E-E-L, because the Lord's heel is on it. Just like you tell the dog.
Okay. That's the part. I was thinking H-E-L-L.
H-E-A-L, H-E-E-L. Not H-E-L-L.
Okay? I didn't get the connection. Yeah. I got my English.
So it's a pun.
Yeah.
So just like you tell the dog, heel. Because the dog goes everywhere and you don't want it to go everywhere. So you say heel. It comes and sits down. So similarly, you have a way over the unconscious becomes like a pet dog. You can just command heel. And then because it is given to the Lord, H-E-A-L also will happen. Healing will of a different kind will also happen.
Thank you.
So, next one. Transfer, what you mean to say is transference and counter-transference.
Yes.
Please elaborate on these in terms of observing it and not getting trapped by it, and eventually how to transcend it. Yeah, very good question. So, in psychological parlance, we have this term called transference. Transference means that it's actually adhyasa that we use in Sanskrit. See, really, they took everything from Vedanta, the modern psychology. It's so much fun to see the parallels. So, adhyasa meaning atasmin tad buddhi. See, atasmin means in not that, not whatever. So, in not that, that buddhi. So, that buddhi in whatever in the locus which it is not that. What does that mean? Okay, so for example, in the rope with three bends lying on the lawn, and it is this kind of a twilight time, you go out and see the rope, and what do you say? Huh? Come on, help me.
Snake.
No, first you say eek, then you say snake. Right? You say snake. And then where is the snake? Huh? Where is the snake? Don't say it is lying on the ground. It is not. Because what's lying on the ground, I already gave it out. What is lying on the ground is a rope. So the snake is in the buddhi. Atasmin, in not snake, snake buddhi, is called adhyasa. This is transference. This is transference. Because in the unconscious mind, there is a fear of snakes. Total fear of snakes. And that fear of snakes, you know, and in combination with the dim light, unable to see very clearly. Unable to see what it is not, what it is, you can't make out. And so this becomes the rope becomes a sitting duck for the transference, you know, the projection of the snake. So this projection, when it happens interpersonally, is called transference. So here it is with the inanimate thing called the rope, correct? And that's why it's called aropa or adhyasa, you know, because rope is involved. Yeah. So then, here is what the whole thing is, and so this is so the rope becomes the locus of one's projection, and then in the human interaction, because of this first question, the unconscious that one carries around, in the form of all kinds of impressions from the past. And also authority figures. This is very important. Authority figures from the present time. Authority figures from one's own childhood. This is not past lives or anything. From the present childhood. In terms of what I call primary scare givers. And so we have, you know, so the child has, you know, some problems or some issues connected with the memory of the mother and father. Maybe the mother was impatient one day and said, go away. You know, just like Nachiketa's father. Who are you giving me to? Who are you giving me to? And what did Nachi's father say? Nachi's father said, go to hell. Go to Lord Yama. And so, and then he was a little traumatized from that. Even in the Kathopanishad we see that the first two boons, he asks that the father should be all right. Yeah. So, that's his first boon he asks. I want the father to be okay. He was a little traumatized. That can be traumatic. But the father didn't mean anything wrong. He was impatient. He got angry. It happens to the best parent. You know. And so, these kinds of things remain in the mind of the child. And the child grows up. And then, if it meets somebody where that, you know, kind of a memory, but not a clear memory is there. Certain mannerisms, certain way of talking, something reminds of that hurt or the person who hurt it, it will commit a transference as an adult. So this transference, it's of two kinds. In Sanskrit, we call it shobhana adhyasa, a positive transference, you know, where you are reminded of some loving presence in the current person or the situation, or ashobhana adhyasa, a transference which is a difficult transference, a negative transference. So both of those are possible over the people. So this is what happens. So this is called transference. So you meet somebody, you know, who should be your equal, who is your friend, let us say a new friend that you have made, and you like the person, there is something very familiar about them, but then you notice that there is something also very uncomfortable, horribly, horribly uncomfortable, and you don't know what it is, and you find yourself deferring to the person for no reason, even though it's an equal relationship. They're not an elder, they're not a teacher, they are not, you know, the age of your mother or father, but still there is some way in which you put yourself down, and if the other person puts you down, you feel bad and you put yourself down further, you self-efface yourself, and there is all these, you know, this is, could be one example. This is what is happening, there's a transference. You are seeing someone else rather than the person. And so and also it can happen, it frequently happens in married couples, you know, father-child, mother-child, whatever it is, relationships. In all relationships it can happen where, you know, you say, for example, somebody can say to somebody, you always do this. This happened. You know, this was, sometimes people do this. You know, this happened to me because a couple came to me and they had been, you know, they had been married just for 6 months. And I could see that there was a lot of affection there. They loved each other a lot. I could see that. But yet they said, I don't want to see him. And he said, I don't want to even look at her. But somehow, you know, therapy hadn't worked. And then when nothing works, they go to the Swami, thinking there may be something there. So I think one of their parents was taking classes and they said, please go to this Swami. And they forced them to go. They came as a last resort. And so I just sat and talked to them. And I said, what's the problem? Because I can see that you're really fond of each other. It's only been 6 months. And what's going on? No. I'm done with this marriage, she said. And he also said something similar. He said, I'm done. I'm also done. I don't want to have anything to do with this. Now, what happened? Well, she said, because whenever he sees me, he makes a face. I said, why? Why does he make a face? And he says, oh, this is the first I've heard of it. You know, I'm not making faces. I never make a face. She says, yes, you do. You make a face. And then after a little while, you know, he went like this. She said, see, he's making a face at me. And then it turned out that they had just moved from some place, I forgot where, and in the new place he was having allergies and he would look like he's anticipating a sneeze, but the sneeze is not coming. And they were ready to end their marriage on this little transference. What was happening was objectively that he's anticipating a sneeze and you can't really will the sneeze to come. Sometimes it comes, sometimes it gets, okay, it didn't come. And so she thought that whenever he's looking at her, instead of looking at her with love, and he's going like this. And so if I'm so distasteful to you, why should I live with you? This was her, you know, thing. So then he said, oh my God, I'm having allergies. And oh, poor darling. And they made up right there. Because it had nothing to do with her at all. But she felt, you know, so she had a transference. And then what happened is that he participated in the counter-transference. Because if she had a transference, it was just on the level of that, you can do something. Correct? You can sort of say, okay, looks like you're having a hard time with me, why? You know? And then she could have said, you're making faces at me. But she had no space to say that because he got angry back. This is called counter-transference. You know? And, you know, she insulted him and he insulted not only her but her mother, father, grandmother, grandfather, three generations. And then it became a big deal. Became a huge deal. Even the therapist was flummoxed, you know. It was just some odd situation suddenly. And if he hadn't made the face right there sitting in front of me, we would have not gotten to the bottom of it. It was God's grace that it happened right there. So you see, so the counter-transference makes any kind of this transference, counter-transference makes any kind of a situation into instant samsara. you know, these days you have instant chai. Somebody gave me a box. Somebody gave me a box. It's so fun, fantastic. You just cut it open and put it and put hot water and you have chai. So if you want instant samsara, you cut it open, you don't need hot water because you are in the hot water already. This is instant samsara, transference and counter transference. And so you can't, you know, it's harder to deal with transference. One's own transference, we talked about in the previous question, that is the unconscious. That's the raw material for the projection, which is called transference in psychological parlance. But we can, one thing we can do is work with counter transference, not being very reactive, learning to listen to the person rather than immediately say something back because we can, you know. You always do this. You know? What do you mean you always do this? You know, I've only, this was another married couple. They were not separating, but they came to see me and they were complaining about their relationship. And, you know, and the man said, she always has this horrible habit of doing this. And you know, and she said, what do you mean always? We have been married for 2 months. What do you mean always? How can it be always? Because you've only known me 2 months. It's an arranged marriage, you know. And so it's not that, you know, we've had a long acquaintance before getting married. No. How can you say this? And so then he also said, oh, that's right. Actually, you are right. I don't know why I felt always. That always is coming from somewhere else. It's not from this situation. So this is the counter transference is, you know, the Carl Jung has the very great psychologist has a wonderful article on counter transference. You should all read it. I'm sure you can find it on the net. And that has a beautiful, you know, that says very nicely that this is where you can stop, participating in the by countering the transference. So this is what you have to stop. And this is where Vedanta also comes into the picture, because what is the Bhagavad Gita, the Upanishads, what do they teach us? They teach us that we have to, you know, not react but respond. React means instant, non-thinking, just whatever, you know, from the Pashu Buddhi, Prakrita Buddhi. Response means you take you wait, count from 10 to 1 if needed, and you know, or count from 99 to 1. Sometimes that is also needed. Some situations are more serious. Count from 99 to 1, or otherwise always carry a paper bag to breathe into if the situation gets very tense so that you can calm down instantly. And then what, you know, so Vedanta teaches us that, you know, so first count from 10 to 1, stop participating, just stop, quieten down, let them rave and rant, you know, the rain, the tsunami will come and stop, let it just rave and rant, you just stop, watch, get to the place of the Sakshi. And then the second thing is appreciate their background. You don't have to agree with their background. You don't have to condone their background. You have to know that such a person has a background. That's what, everybody has a background. Just like you have a background, you know, they have a background. And so just watch the background. And when you watch the background, then you have some, what is that, you know, you have some appreciation of it. So they are like this because, and you may not know why, but you can say they must have. Have some difficulties, some situations, some issues. And so you allow them to be however they are. But at the same time, you have to have healthy boundaries. You can say, for example, I appreciate that you're angry. I can see that you're really angry. But that doesn't give you an excuse to target me for your anger. I can understand that you're angry. You can have healthy boundaries. And that makes all the difference. And that's how to... So when the counter transference is stopped, half the battle is won, and the transference will, stopping the transference is easy as long as you take care of the unconscious, as you parent the unconscious. What to do with desires? Some say enjoy, and to what extent should we enjoy and let them go because they are infinite and others will keep coming up. Others say to drop all desires for once or stop them as they appear. Yeah, depends on what desires they are. Some you can enjoy. That's why I keep saying that we have to distinguish between the desires. Not all desires are the same. You know, a desire to see a movie which has come out is not the same as, you know, something else that one really, 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 really cares about. Movie you care about. But let's say suddenly rain came, bad weather, something happened, you couldn't go, somebody came to your house, so many things. You say, never mind, I'll go next week. Or doesn't matter, I'll wait for it to come on video. It's not a big deal. But it's some other thing, like let's say a job, a relationship, something that really, really matters, your dream house. Can you say the same thing? Let it go, another one will come. Not so easy. Ah. So, therefore, there are two kinds of desires. One we call non-binding, because fulfilled, okay, theek hai. Not fulfilled, oh bhi theek hai, no problem, it's okay, not a problem. But then there are certain other desires which are called binding desires. The first kinds of desires, you can enjoy them because they will never put you in a place of bondage. The second kind of desires, they make you enslaved. Like when we go for a walk, sometimes I see, you know, the person, the owner and the dog. I have only one doubt. Is the dog taking the owner for the walk? Or is the owner taking the dog for a walk? Sometimes it's difficult to tell. Yes. I saw one those, what's that, you know, the polka dotted dog? That big one?
Dalmatian,
correct. The 101, we had that story also. Yeah. That one. Huge thing. And this slight woman, you know, behind it. And it's just taking off. You have to have strong arms to keep this dog under, you know, control. But she was obviously not. She was running behind it wherever it ran. And the leash was just so that she could run behind it. That's all it was. And so like this, you know, the desire will take you for a ride. This is a binding desires. And those, what those are, each one knows. Those buttons, one knows. Each one knows what they are. They, and some are same, some are different. And so those desires, you drop as they arise in the mind, because most of those desires, the binding desires, as, you know, Pujya Swamiji put it very beautifully, they are either illegal or immoral, unethical, or have too many calories, too fattening. So this is the thing. And so therefore, once you decide that this is a binding desire, it has a charge. It makes you feel like, I have to have it right now. Instant gratification or else. And living in this country doesn't help. You can have instantly everything. I just talked to you about instant chai. You can have instantly everything. And this living in this country doesn't help. And if you want to get over binding desires, go to India. It will help you drop them like that. India is a place you go to get ready for Vedanta. Yeah. You know, Dhamma. Got it. Dhamma means non-reactivity, because after reacting, the person gets so tired that one has to, because nothing happens. You can rave, rant, nothing will happen. Yeah. Nothing will happen. Shama, resolve, mind, you better have it, because you won't last a day and you still have two more weeks of vacation. Yeah. Uparati, let go. Yeah, because nothing goes your way. No, but I had tickets. Yeah, but those you were fooled. Those are not really tickets for this event. Sorry, please go. Uparati, let go. Titiksha, OMG. You have to have titiksha in India. Nothing goes. Yeah. Nothing goes at all. And then this thing, and then what? Shraddha. Because the only law in India, somebody said, you know, the only law that works in India is Murphy's Law. Anything that goes wrong, it will go wrong. But I feel like there is an overarching law, Shraddha works. Yeah, you just have faith. You know, I'll tell you, even you don't even have to be in India. You have to be surrounded by everything Indian. You know, there is one direct flight that comes, Air India flight, from Delhi to San Francisco, it comes. And little scary. You have to really have a lot of Shraddha to get out of the Everything rattles. Gada, 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 as soon as you sit. And as it takes off, you get a funny feeling. And then, you know, and this particular flight, I was sitting in the very back with two, with a Sikh couple, you know, from, we boarded the flight in Delhi, and, you know, middle-aged, elderly Sikh couple. And I was in the window, and the husband and wife, the wife was next to me, and the husband was on the aisle. And so, you know, and then, of course, it had not helped that the pilot said we are going to be 15 minutes late because, you know, if you are sitting on the right side of the plane, which I was, you can look at the the wing, and then you can see something dripping, and there's oil dripping on the eye. Can you see that? Unfortunately, we all could. And so he said, okay, that's why we have to fix it. And then after that, we took off, and then, you know, and then I could see them, you know, pressing their seat back entertainment. Nothing is working, you know, and then once it was safe, the seat belt sign is off, they are calling the flight attendant saying both of those are not working. In the meantime, mine was working, so I gave them my headphones so they could see and listen, you know, and they were doing that. And the flight attendant comes and, you know, and I was just sitting, and then I just thought, okay, since they are watching the movie, whatever it was, I just thought I will just do my japa. So I was sitting and doing my japa. The flight attendant comes and says, what's the matter? And, you know, and they didn't speak very good English, so I spoke for them. And I said, this gentleman and lady, they don't have their seat back entertainment system, you know, work. And it's a 16 and a half hour flight. It's not like 4-5 hours or even 9 hours where you change. It's a long flight. And so, you know, she says, she banged it for good measure and she kicked the seat. Nothing happened except the irate man from there looking, what are you doing? And, you know, and she said, okay, well, you know, did something and called somebody else and nothing. It was clear. It was just broken. It was just not working. And then she said, why are you bothering with these things? At your age, you should be doing Nam Japa. For 16 hours. This is India. So they didn't, they looked so, and she shamed them. She said, see how she's doing Japa. See how the Swamiji is doing her mala. You should also just join her and you should also do that. And, you know, and then I spoke on their behalf. I said, you know, to make them do this, you know, for 16 and a half hours. I said, look, they are watching the movie from an angle from this side. And, you know, and even if I keep my window closed, half of the time it's glazed. They can't even see it. And for 16 hours, it's an elderly, you know, couple. Do something. Then finally she exchanged the seat with two workaholics who were always on their computer who didn't want to see, you know, sit. So this is what it is. India means Shraddha. And then all this makes you become a mumukshu because nothing else works. Yes. And then you come into the lap of Vedanta. So this, the whole point is this country with all its instant gratification, all the gadgets at our, you know, fingertips and anything that we want is here and you can see a movie downloaded right in the palm of your hand. You can have so many things to eat. Even if you don't want to go out, you can order in. You can do hundreds of things. It doesn't help. So the binding desires keep on raging. But that is where we have to exercise. That is what has to be dropped. We know what those binding desires are. Anything illegal, you know, unethical and fattening has to be dropped. Yeah. And then the rest of it, it's easy because, you know, you just do that. And how to... So the main thing is to get to the place where these binding desires that enslave one make you free enough to... They become non-binding in nature. That's a process. Vedanta helps. Study helps. Satsang helps. Being with like-minded people helps. Changing the channel helps. When something is doggedly chasing you, some desire, go for a walk. Do a little brisk walk, even around the house. Clean a room. You know, do some other project. Change that channel. And then you will have a say over it. It's a process. You can't suppress the desire. You can just outgrow it. Mm. And that's a process. Or kya? Pratibhasika, subjective reality, versus paramarthika sat, objective reality. Paramarthika sat is not srishti. You said drishti and srishti. Paramarthika sat srishti nahi hai. Paramarthika sat is beyond srishti. Yeah.
Okay, so
I just wanted to tell you that. Yeah. It is understandable that we have to overcome the internal subjective projection, vikshepa, which we are talking about, that creates misinterpretations. How does one overcome the commonly observed objective reality, Ishvara Srishti? Is it getting beyond the names given to forms and our baggage of ideas and concepts? Firstly, you don't have to overcome Srishti. You can't. How are you going to overcome Srishti? You know, Srishti is the chair you are sitting on. Overcome Srishti means you will have a fall. Yeah, and then you will have Prithvi. You will be sitting on Prithvi, which is the earth, Mother Earth. Earth is an element. So then you overcome Prithvi. Where will you be? Hanging out in air? Then air is also an element. Space is an element. So there is no need to overcome Srishti. You have to understand Srishti is an effect, and as though effect of Bhagavan, and that effect, you know, is in the form, is non-separate from Bhagavan, which is the cause. Bhagavan is the cause. And so that I, that Vedanta Shastra talks about, is free of cause, free of effect, that consciousness alone is, and it is free of cause, free of effect. And that is what has to be understood. So in order to do that, you don't have to remove the Srishti, because you cannot. No, but I'll close my eyes. Well, what will you do after closing your eyes? You know, how are you going to, you'll still bump into something. Oh, things that go bump in the night. That's what will happen. You'll bump into something because you can't, you know, pretend that it's all gone. That's what Lord Krishna tried to do when he was a baby. There is a beautiful poem, Krishna Karnamritam. Very nice. And there, this baby Krishna is telling, in the writer's imagination, is telling his mother, Dehi Chashakam. Chashakam means a cup. Mom, give me a cup. And she says, what for? You know? Why you want this cup? And he says, to drink milk. And she says, now there is no milk. No, I want milk. Milk comes at night. That's when they bring the milk at night. That time you can have milk. And Krishna is a small boy. And he says, what is night? When everything is dark and you cannot see anything, it is night. And then, you know, Yashoda is doing her own work. Again, 2 minutes later, baby Krishna says, Dehi Chashakam, give me a cup. Hare, I just told you, you know, I can't give you a cup because it's not night. And she looks at him and he has closed his eyes tight. She says, it is night, give me a cup. I want to drink milk. So, you know, you can't do this. You cannot make night just by closing the eyes. Because Ishvara Srishti is here, but it is mithya. So you can't keep on saying everything is mithya, mithya. Otherwise, you know, you can't participate in life. So it's better to see the satyam in and through the mithya. How? You Ishvarize the universe. Everything you see Ishvara. First you see the name and form, but there's nothing to go beyond. What is beyond name and form? Beyond name and form is nothing. You. That's what it is. It's you. There is one fellow here, a cartoonist, who calls himself Beyond Ananda. Swami Beyond Ananda. He's not a Swami. He's a cartoonist. Yeah, you can Google him and see. I have not heard from, seen any of his cartoons for a while. I don't know what he's up to. Be interesting to find out. But he used to write some kind of political cartoons. And so, you see, there's nothing to overcome. There's nothing to, you know, nothing to transcend. What you do is you look at, you know, you look at everything as Ishvara. You know, tree is Ishvara, flower is Ishvara, you know, everything is Ishvara. In-law Ishvara, outlaw Ishvara. In-laws who behave like outlaws, definitely Ishvara. Outlaws who behave like in-laws, what does that look like? Recently they apprehended one fellow. This comes under this, what is that? Dumb criminals. Okay, so this fellow goes to a house, just a regular suburban house off the street, to in some city, I forget, somewhere in Mississippi. So he goes to rob the place and he gets in, he cuts open the basement window, goes in, small independent house. And then instead of doing his job, what did he come there to do? He came to rob the place. So instead of filling up his sack or whatever he brought, he got horrified because the people living there had three small children, twins and another older boy. And so he got horrified at that the family lived like pigs. And so he said he had OCD and the robber. And he started to clean up. And he folded everything and kept all the throws of the thing. And he put away all the toys. And then he said, I'm here, might as well do a load of laundry. And he, you know, and he got, you know, he put the load of laundry in the machine. And then, you know, what happened was that he then, this thing, what is that, he then said, you know, by that time he collected some home stereo system that he wanted to take and a couple of laptops. He had helped himself to that and he had put it aside by the door. Still, he could not leave the dishes in the sink. And, you know, he had come there. The reason why he chose this house is because he found their Facebook photos that they had gone somewhere and they had gone somewhere for the weekend and they put holiday photos and there they had inadvertently said coming back Sunday night. So he went in the morning. So they're not going to be back till night. But he did all these chores. It was already night and he was apprehended washing and drying the last dish. You know, last dish, you know, in the kitchen window. So, in fact, the people saw a shadow in their kitchen window which faced the street when the family drove in. So, they cut the lights of the car and called 911 and didn't enter the house. And so, he was apprehended putting the dishes away. So, you see, like that, you know, this is the, what is it called, you know? Outlaws behaving like in-laws. He should just do his job and go. And then he was very angry. See, they should pay me. I've worked here for 4 hours. So, this is a very polite robber. And so we learn to Ishwarize. And certain things are very difficult to Ishwarize. But Ishwarizing is like weatherizing the windows. It gives a certain kind of a insulation to not react and to fall in that, fall in that Shraddha that everything is as it's meant to be. This doesn't mean you don't work for what you want. It doesn't mean that you don't do what you need to do. It doesn't mean that you don't pursue things in life. We are talking of things you cannot, absolutely cannot prevent. We are talking of the inevitable. And when you see in the inevitable the infallible, that is paramartha. Yes, that is paramarthikam sat. You just see that it simply is. And that is finally revealed in the Vedanta Shastra as non-separate from you. Next. Oh, already, last one. Yeah. Chapter 6 of Shvetashvatara. Okay. Some speculate that time is real and others take the world to be real by the behaviors and words that we use. Some examples so we can be more observant of these to understand this mithya jagat. Yeah, you know, everybody takes the world to be real. And time, you know, all you have to see is look at a BART station in the morning. I mean, you know, it's just so rushed and people are running. And even though there is a train every 5 minutes, you know that if you don't catch this one, you'll catch the next one. But why do you have to, you know, break a leg literally and go catch that one? But there is a certain inner pressure that responds to the outer pressure that one sees. And so everybody's inner pressure becomes outer pressure. And you just sort of see everyone running against time. And same thing in terms of one's lifespan, one is running against time. The moment one is born, one feels like one is dying. Not as a baby, of course, but in hindsight, one says, okay, I have to protect the skin. I have to protect the hair. I have to protect the body from wear and tear. It kind of became a poem. Yeah. So, I have to do this, I have to do that. And so, by the time one is 50, you know, there's only the quarter plate of food and 3/4 pills. Yeah. Antioxidants and this and that and so many things you have to keep on taking to keep this going. Otherwise it all collapses, or that's the feeling that one is under the grip of time. One is under the grip of a cruel world where the karma is always against me, one feels. But actually it is not. Objectively speaking, the body is, you know, is already dead when it is born, because that's where it's going to end up. The mind, the only thing you can say about the mind is, never mind. That's all you can say for certain. So, therefore, one has to be, that's why satsang becomes very important, where that you have to go against the grain. You know, that is what is in the Kathopanishad described as a dhira. Dhira is a person of buddhi, a buddhi, samskrita buddhi, who goes against the grain of this rat race of time and the world and all these things. It's very difficult to do it alone. That's why the study helps, groups like this help, and all kinds of things help. And therefore one has to get to the place of, you know, being with that satsang mentality. And then so when one leaves this room and goes, at least some of it is there so that we catch ourselves, you know. And then soon it becomes one's lifestyle. Slowly it becomes one's lifestyle. What I say is in keeping with what I think. What I think is in keeping with how I act. All these things are aligned, and, you know, there is a kind of a consistency to the person. The person is reliable, dharmic. Dharma is very important here. That's how to, you know, cut this myth of time. And it's not, you know, it's interesting that Yama is called Dharmaraja. That's why. So you see there is a connection. So dharma doesn't keep you out of time per se, because there's no, time is mithya anyway. But what dharma does is that you don't come under the spell of time, because dharma becomes more important than time. What is right, you know, what is important, what is ethical, what is correct for me, what is correct in the eyes of the society, what is correct absolutely, samanya dharma, vishesha dharma, swadharma, all these things become very important. So that one is able to not, you know, come under the spell of this time. And then dharma makes you qualified to study Vedanta. And that is where you discover the truth of yourself as limitless, timeless. Yeah. Other questions?
I have a question about, I feel I understand it, but today morning I was talking to my husband and I feel. So he was asking about, like, what we have, this vishalta, like some bhavna, like you should like everybody, love everybody. But suppose I'm making a box of halwa for my son,
yeah,
and he's in a classroom,
yeah,
of 30 students.
Yeah.
And I know that doesn't mean that I should make 30 boxes of halwa.
Yeah.
But from the Vedantic and philosophical perspective, I couldn't explain to him,
yeah,
how the sambhavna, samvartan and vishalta works.
Yeah. So, you know, it's not about 30 boxes of halwa. It is about the feeling, you know. It's about your own managing the mind and managing the emotions in such a way that suppose that box of halwa that you made for the young man was given away or taken away by someone else. Ah, that is Vishakha, that is Samabhavana. Ah, that, you know, this actually, this is illustrated in none other than Ramakrishna Paramahamsa's life. Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, as we all know, had throat cancer towards the end of his days. And he was very brave, all the time just taking the name of the Divine Mother. But he says that he also had a moment of weakness. The same halwa and puri were being made for 2,000 people at the ashram for some big festival, I forget what it was. And then the smell, and his room was right next to the kitchen. And the smell of the halwa and the puri being fried was coming to his nostrils. And he had a weak moment and said, Ma, what is this? You're not, you know, you're letting me enjoy the fragrance of this halwa, but I can't even eat. I'm so, such an unlucky man. I can't even eat a little bit. I can't even taste it because of my illness. And immediately he felt a like a slap on his head, a knock on his head. He just was like the Divine Mother. Mataji came and knocked him on his head. The end of pity party, she said. And then, you know, she said, idiot, you are eating through 2,000 mouths that are going to be coming in the ashram in half an hour. And you're just lying here complaining, feeling sorry for yourself. I'm giving you 2,000 mouths, not one. And then he just immediately understood that, yes, in fact, I'll be having a feast. So this is there in the gospel, in one of the life stories of his, maybe not in the gospel, but in one of the other books, you know, that is what it is.
I think I understood it better when you said it. If I had read the gospel before, I think it would have gone over my head.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah, so that me and mine, nothing wrong. My son, my son's halwa, okay, but supposing he left it somewhere, somebody else got it, theek hai, no problem.
So to be what the Mata said to Paramahansa, I mean, I get the concept.
Sarvatma bhava.
Haan, wo samajh mein aaya. But when I see if I was Paramahansa, I don't think I would be still frustrated. So that means I don't have that bhavna.
It will come. Aa jayega. Vedant padhte raho, aa jayega. Koi baat nahi. Keep studying. When you keep studying, it comes. Slowly, but it comes.
So you're saying that the Srishti is not something that... So of course the challenge is to recognize...
Ishvara is the Srishti.
Yeah, this Mithyatvam.
Yes, but you don't worry about Mithya. Ishvara. Go straight to Ishvara. Don't worry about Mithya. Woh aa jayega. It will come.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just surrender to what is.
You say this is Ishvara. Everything in Srishti, when you take a walk, this is what I do when I take a walk. Every tree, everything, even like today we came in the drive, it's all Ishvara.
Yeah.
That beautiful view, that, you know, the mountains, the hills, the golf course, the water, everything. The sun, what a perfect day. It's all Bhagavan. Enjoy Bhagavan in the form of nature. Very easy to do because nature doesn't complain. And it's easy. And from there we graduate to seeing Bhagavan in the pet. That also doesn't complain and gives unconditional love. That's also easy. Then you graduate towards other inanimate things in the house and then finally you graduate to, you know, things that are difficult, significant other, child, boss, you know, all these people. Yeah. Slowly, you just Ishwarize. Don't worry about Mithya, don't worry about Srishti. We worry about our Drishti, our attitude towards the Srishti.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or kya? Other questions? Do you have any questions?
I have a doubt on. Yes, from that, I mean, I think I have an answer, but still, like, not a proper understanding. So, last. So Ashtavakra Gita, I won't be able to say it in Sanskrit, but the sense of to do, like duty, It's like a Martandappa sun, like fiery hot sun that's going to burn you up.
Mm.
So you should be free of that.
Yeah.
So the thought I came with, dharma is about...
See, you can't just suddenly give up dharma.
Because,
see, Ashtavakra Gita is a very late level text in the tradition.
Right.
Pehle nahi padhate. Pehle to Kathopanishad, chota ji, you know, baby steps. Yeah, so you cannot suddenly, for the person, you know, after such a lot of work, in the work, the person has come to Vedanta and you cannot say all this is mithya and there is nothing here. The person will be put off and go away. No dharma means what? You know, that will be every serial offender's confession. Not guilty by akartritvam. I'm not akarta, your brother, I'm not the doer. You know? So therefore, you know, the dharma, karma, all these things, they are like the training wheels on a toddler's bike. So on a child's bike, you put the training wheels, because until the child learns to balance and manage on the road and avoid other incoming other things and learns to drive, then after that the wheels come off. So similarly, one has to get stuck to the following the road of dharma before the training wheels, the concept, the model of karma, dharma, all that falls off. Falls off means what? One wakes up to another
reality.
So that's when the sun, you know, scorches all the things that, you know, it's like waking up to something that one was asleep to because of ignorance. So the one wakes up finally. Ya nisha sarva bhutanam tasyam jagrati sanyami yasyam jagrati bhutani sa nisha pashyato munehe. So it's night and day. The enlightened person, to which reality she or he is awakened to that reality all the masses happily sleep the sleep of ignorance. And to the things that they are interested, like malls, balls, etc., the jnani is snoring, not at all interested. The two realities don't even match, they are on different levels.
Context, yeah.
Yeah, different context, completely different.
Yeah.
Like if you dream that three fellows are chasing you and you're fighting in the bed, and somebody wakes you up and gives you a glass of water, thank God it's a dream. Do you start running after drinking the water? Do you start running? Yes?
No.
You don't run. Why? Because that was then, this is now. Or as I like to say, that was Zen, this is Tao. So, you don't run because that is over. That's done. That's how, and the three fellows are prarabdha, agami, sanchita. Three forms of karma. Where do you stay?
I live in San Jose.
In San Jose. But tomorrow night I'm speaking at the Shivananda. Can you forward them the invitation?
Oh, yes,
that'd
certainly
be nice. Yeah.
Okay.
6 to 8. It's on 1185 Vicente Street in San Francisco. Shivananda Yoga Center, San Francisco. If you Google, you will get it, the address.
So is it an open?
Yeah, anybody can. Yeah, it's Vedanta for daily life.
Oh.
Yeah, that's the topic. Most welcome you all if you want to come.
How did that come to be? Who's hosting? Is there a person who put that
The
together?
Swami who's there.
Oh.
Yeah. Yes.
So how often do you come to the Bay Area?
I'm here every fall.
Oh, every fall?
Yes, for 4 months. For 5 months I'm here.
So oh, till when? Till February?
Pardon me?
Till when?
Till another 10, 15 days. That's all.
Oh, the fall is already done.
Yeah, fall is done. This is towards the end. Fall is almost
done. Oh, 5, 6 weeks, not months.
Yes. No. Four and a half months.
When did you come?
August. August to end of August.
Just because this time she had to do
Yeah,
this.
I was
oh,
commuting.
Okay.
I was commuting.
Oh.
I don't know how you did that.
It's all God's grace. I don't know how I did that either. It's Bhagavan, really.
So that Berkeley course is finished
every
now?
Fall. No, it's it will get over at the middle of December.
Okay.
Yeah, it will be done.
Well,
you're most welcome to come. In fact, next Tuesday we are having a little, what's that, party. You can come. Yeah, you can come. In fact, it's all stuff you like. All the questions here, resolving inner duality is the topic. So, it's your favorite topic.
Do you teach the same course every fall?
No, different courses. Last time I taught Hindu ritual studies, that was a lot of fun. First course, first class, they were making turmeric Ganeshas. They had so much fun. And then we did a yajna in the ISKCON temple that I was telling you about. I took the students to the yajna. And then we did so many things. We did a baby, two students had small babies. So one, we had a Namakaranam for one. And then we had a Aksharabhyasa for the other. And then we had, there was one more visiting baby that came. So we demonstrated Annaprashana also for that. And so it was very nice. We did a number of things. And then finally I said, the only thing we haven't done is marriage. If anybody wants to get married, raise your hands. So we did that. And then we had, before that also I taught something, Hindu vision of God. Now I'm teaching a class called Theology of Oneness. Next semester I'll be teaching Upanishads. Yeah, next fall. Yes. Yeah.
So, you have to enroll in the course to attend the classes?
No, you can attend the classes. You don't have to enroll the course. He has already got all the information. I said, come here next week, you can all come. Please come. We'll have fun. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe we should organize some more satsangs.
Sure.
Actually, that was something. I would like to invite you to. So, what is availability generally like between now and next week?
I'll make time. Tell me what you had in mind.
I was going to have my son drive me from Berkeley to my home. And
where is your house?
It's in South Bay.
Okay.
But he's in, I could have him come.
Okay.
And then I can,
Are you in South Bay, means?
Cupertino,
San Jose. Cupertino, yeah.
It is near San Jose.
Yeah. I'll come.
That would be great.
Yeah.
So then
I'll come.
Yeah.
Maybe in the weekend it has to be, right?
No, that's just about, then I'll check to my son and then make it happen.
So, weekend means that will be, the Friday is the 7th, Saturday the 8th, and Sunday the 9th. I'll look into it and I think I can do it one of those days, probably Saturday. Or maybe even if it is later in the evening, maybe even Sunday.
Okay.
But I think Saturday might be better.
Okay. Then I'll get your email.
Yeah.
From
Saturday might be better. How about during the daytime? Like, you want me to give a talk?
We'll go with that.
So then, how about if we do something like 11 to 12:30 or something like that?
Sunday.
Saturday. Yeah. Would that work for you?
Maybe afternoon, after.
Like today, how we did 4 to 6?
Yeah, that would be better.
Okay. Alright, you can do that also, not a problem.
Yeah, and I'll connect with you, because it would be nice to just all my 30-year-old children and then the rest of the group.
Sure.
To the younger group.
No problem, we can do that. I'll think of some topic.
Yeah. Any question? Scott is very logical. Come on.
I'm curious about one thing. Your teaching seems very effective, this style. Specifically to this group of people that's very receptive to it. But what is your approach to people who haven't sought out this teaching?
I don't teach them. It's a very simple approach. Why force, this is nothing to do with forcing people. This is something, once they are interested, they come, and they want to learn, they learn. because the effectiveness, as you correctly observed, is only there when there is receptivity. And that receptivity, you know, is part of one's own homework, one's own desire. And when the desire is there, even if it's a small flickering desire, if they bring it to a Vedanta teacher who is skilled will be able to make that into a big flame. Yeah, that is the idea. So, but that desire is something that has to be articulated, and that desire has to come from the person. Otherwise, we wouldn't be any different than Jehovah's Witnesses, you know, or some other evangelical, you know, type who will come and, you know, force themselves and say, this is what you have to believe, or this is why this is so persuasive. You know, we don't have any truck with that. We don't need to do that. Because if there are people interested, well and good. If not, you know, that's a Swami's day off.
Yeah, because this knowledge is different levels of subtlety also.
Yeah, one has to be thinking about this already. Like, who am I? What is this body? You know, what is this whole life other than just to live, eat, sleep, die? You know, is there something else that's going on? Those questions at least must be there. Then the person is attracted to something like this. You know, so we do our part to, you know, I mean, I don't even advertise. I mean, whoever is, you know, Shiva knows. He's been taking online classes for many years now. So I don't advertise unless somebody says, please put me on your mailing list. And, you know, then I say, okay, we don't try to. Because, you see, we are renunciants. You know, we just have a life that is there and we are of service. And it is of service to whoever seeks us. You know, you won't see us going from door to door. In fact, you shouldn't see us going from door to door and canvassing. Something is wrong, you know. Because a renunciant is one that lets go of these kinds of ambitions, including the ambition to have a following, you see. And so this is not something that is actually askance to the lifestyle. So the lifestyle is in keeping with the vision. The vision is you are whole. And that wholeness only attracts the extent to which you are able to model it. You know, that is the whole idea. So this is what you teach. And there should be no difference between the walk and the talk. The walk and the talk should align. And that's what makes this teaching attractive. Not any other flyers that one can have. That's the whole idea. Strange business.
What else do you do, Swamini, other than the fall teaching? Where do you
teach? I just teach everywhere. Wherever I'm called, I teach. I teach in, you know, India. I teach in Oregon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you based in India or based in Oregon?
I don't have a base. I'm a baseless Swami.
So I'm studying Sanskrit, that's fine.
Pardon.
So I'm trying to, my question is that, so I'm trying to read I'm doing the Sankhya Karika and the Bhasha that comes with it. But it's very difficult. So, apne aap karte hain, then I also have a lot of help, thanks to internet, I got a lot of translation and all that. But it's different than, like you say, you know, you started out saying that Shat Vikar and all that. I mean,
yeah.
Those are the gems that I like to, because it clarifies.
Yes.
I've not been able to find a teacher or, like, they say, whenever you, they say general lectures, or whatever, English
Sanskrit.
Mein hota hai, Sanskrit based, like,
yeah.
You take a text and you go through it.
Yeah.
So, like, you know,
we, that's what we do in Vedanta. We take the text and go through it one by
word,
one.
Word by
yeah,
word.
And everything is there. I'll give you one website.
Okay.
I'll give
course.
You the website. Everything you can listen to for free.
No
problem.
No, so that's what I give.
Yeah, I'll give it to you. You can listen for free.
Them, yeah.
I'll write it to you. Give me a pen. I'll give it to you. Not a problem. We should close before we disperse. ॐ सर्वे भवन्तु सुखिनः सर्वे सन्तु निरामयाः सर्वे भद्राणि पश्यन्तु मा कश्चित् दुःखभाग् भवेत्। asatoma sadgamaya tamasoma jyotirgamaya mrityorma amritangamaya om purnamadah purnamidam purnat purnamudachyate purnasya purnamadaya purnameva avashishyate om shanti shanti shantih harihi om shri gurubhyo namaha harihi om